Welcome back to the Sandy Springs Christian Conversations podcast / YouTube. I am Casey Evans, member at Sandy Springs Christian Church in Sandy Springs, Georgia. And I am joined again today by my co-host, Reverend Dr. Nathan Brown, who will introduce himself more formally.
Hey, everybody. Good to be back with you again. Thank you, Casey. Pastor Nathan at Sandy Springs Christian Church, Sandy Springs, Georgia. We're glad to be doing this both for our congregation and for the wider community and world, all those who are tuning in. So we're glad you're listening today, wherever you might be. We always like to start by sort of expressing the purpose of this podcast. And so once again, today we'll share with you our mission, which is to be a hope-filled effort by and for the people of Sandy Springs Christian Church, as a way to connect to and communicate with both people in our congregation and the greater Sandy Springs, Atlanta, Georgia area. They hope to be positive conversations about our community and it's in our relationship to God. So once again, we're glad you're here today. And each week we're going to try to do something a little bit different to kind of sort of be on a specific topic, although I know Casey and I will go down a few rabbit trails here and there. But this week,
yes, we will.
We've chosen the word. Last week was hope. This week we've chosen the word of patience. And as we were kind of thinking through sort of what people have been through here recently and what we're still sort of in, we've been doing a lot of waiting, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Waiting for some kind of new norm, waiting for
good
vaccines, waiting for good news. There's been quite a bit of waiting, and as a result of that, we've had to exhibit perhaps some of the most patience we've had to live in a long time in most of our individual and collective lives. And so we thought that could kind of guide our conversation today. And as it relates to that, we thought we might discuss a little bit about sort of what we've learned from that waiting. We've all had time in the last year to kind of reflect on lots of different aspects from our individual lives, our corporate lives, work lives, personal lives. There's been plenty of time for reflection. And I think as a result of that, many lessons learned, and hopefully perhaps changing some of our lives and some of our habits and routines and the way we live those lives, changing the world as a result of some of those lessons learned. And so I think that's where we're going to start today, if that works for you, Casey.
Yeah.
And we can kind of
that's perfect. And I'd love to start us off with kind of the biggest overarching lesson that I've learned about my life because of the 2020 era pandemic, and even before that, but really kind of highlighted because of it, which is, I mean, the reality of my adult life has been a constant go, 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 as fast as I can, sell as much as I can, and work as hard as I can, and party as hard as I can, and just live as hard and fast as I can. And then guess what happened in March of last year? Like everything just came to a halt. All of my plans for the year, all of my intentions to go out and travel and, you know, sell and be as successful as I possibly could in my job. All of that changed dramatically because I couldn't go out and do that. Every norm that I knew, especially from business world perspective, changed when I had to cancel everything and kind of figure out what my role was, which I did eventually, and I got into a new routine. But one of the things that I learned during that routine was that maybe I just, enjoy this new world that we're in the sense that I actually can watch the sunrise every day and watch the birds sing outside of my window and watch the flowers bloom as they are intended to be viewed, not on a quick snippet by snippet basis. I've never had that slowness in my life, which I've come to really appreciate. The other thing that I fortunately have experienced during this time is, first of all, I'm lucky to have gotten married right before all of this happened. I know plenty of people who are still patiently waiting to get married because they were supposed to get married last year. And a lot of those marriages either got put on hold because they still wanted to do something formal. They didn't want to just go to a courthouse and do something, formal. I've thankfully was married to Brandy, my wife. Thank you, Nathan. And we also kind of realized that, we really love being with each other all the time, and that we really enjoyed the company that we had for each other. We're very thankful that we had each other through that and still have each other. Quite frankly, I struggle to find a reason to go back to that insanity that was my life, and traveling and doing all those things and going out and, wining and dining. I mean, those things certainly filled a role in my life, but now that I've kind of been forced to kind of change things up, I've started to realize there's actually a much bigger purpose in life, if you will, because of this. So because of patience, I had to learn the patience of sitting down, and learning new things. I've definitely had a life-changing experience through all this, which I'm still just kind of unpacking right now, and kind of is also one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast, because I truly believe that having these conversations will help guide me in the next steps of my both professional and also spiritual life.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of, the pause button on the remote control is a really important button, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you need to take a break. Sometimes you gotta hit the pause button so you can tend to other things. And I feel like I hadn't really thought of this until you were talking. I was listening, but I feel like this last year was like one big pause button, and it was like. It was like the pause we all needed to kind of force us to reflect on our lives in general, the world in general, and I mean, to your point, Casey, you're so fortunate to, be married to someone who, you do get along so well with, and you all are have this wonderful relationship, and it's only deepened that, and that's been a gift for you all. The other side of that
hasn't always been, the land of milk and honey either. Like our difficulties through even this period, but I think that those difficulties have coalesced into something stronger and better because of it. So, yeah.
Sure. Well, it's forced all of us to, spend more time with our families, with, those who we are literally in the same household with, which in some cases has caused us to kind of have conversations we might not have otherwise had, to sort of have those thoughts of, are we really happy? is this really, do I really want to be doing this job, or do I really want to be living this way every day? And in some ways that's actually caused many couples to say, no, and maybe this isn't best for us, and maybe we do need to, it's uncovered perhaps things that were there that, we were so busy, kind of trying to avoid in some ways, that it forced us to all kind of have a reckoning in some ways of every aspect of our lives, which again may have been painful at times, to your point, and in fact may have even led to great changes in some people's lives. But nevertheless, you know, you hope has been for the best for everyone in the long term, in terms of being able to really find that time to really wrestle with the stuff that we sort of sweep under the rug or avoid because it's hard. Mm-hmm. And rather than dealing with it, we just do as you say, we fill our lives up with everything else we can to avoid dealing with what's you know, lying there in the middle of the room. You know?
So what are those things that you've wrestled with and you've reckoned with through this period?
You know, I think it's similar to you. I would articulate it a little bit differently. You know, we went from one extreme to the other overnight. We went from, as you said, going as fast as we can, as hard as we can all the time, to be as productive as we could. You know, the phrase work hard, play hard, it was a mantra, you know, through our culture that just permeates our culture. You know, you go. You know, you involve your kids in as many things as possible so they can be as competitive as they can be to get into the college they want to get into or do the work they want to do down the road. And, you know, you want to be as productive as you can at your work so that, you know, you have a successful career and vocational life and all those things. And, you know, you spend all this time filling up your time with everything you can, that you lose sight of creation itself is formed and intentionally made to have balance in it, right? Mm-hmm. To have balance between work and play, rest and, you know, work or whatever it might be. And I think what happened overnight was we went from having all this time filled to, not the least of which in Atlanta, for instance, in your car, going from, you know, your home to work or your home to your next meeting or your home to work out or whatever it might be, all that time in our cars, all of a sudden we had to do with what we wanted. And we found ourselves instead going for walks in our neighborhoods, to your point about sort of appreciating more being outside. That's another point in terms of balance. We spent so much time inside, in offices, in our houses, in restaurants, and play, you know, and all of a sudden we were forced in every respect of our lives to be outside almost all the time. Now, granted, many of us had to shelter in place, but, you know, in our homes, but the only place we could go that was safe was outside.
And to prove that just a little bit is, as you know, and maybe some people listening to this know, I'm a very big, you know, proponent of running. I also cycle. And I run all around Sandy Springs, wherever I am. That's always been my thing. And I can tell you without a shred of doubt, like the number of people that have seen running the streets of Sandy Springs is 3, 4, 5 fold what I used to see when I would go out running, even on crummy weather days. Like people just go outside, you know, it's great. It's so wonderful. It's God's greatest, you know, gift to us as human beings. It's so good.
We would see every day. I mean, we've never seen, and really what it did was too, you ended up interacting with your neighbors more. Now, granted, at a socially distanced manner, but you had all of your neighbors who were outside working in their yards, walking in the neighborhood. And so inevitably you'd be outside too. Hey, you know, and you touch base with them in a way that you normally wouldn't. And we've gotten close to some of our neighbors because you kind of end up sort of sheltering in place with your neighbors to some degree because they're there in the cul-de-sac with you, or they're there on the street with you. And, you know, so there was some of that came of it as well. The other balance that I think, you know, we struck was, you know, we were in many respects, I think we talked about this last week, in many respects, we were becoming so connected in ways that we've never been before in the sort of global community because of technology. And that was moving in a direction toward where we are now, which is really more and more so being reliant upon that technology for interaction and connection. And what we lost in that, what we could not do, was actually be together in person. Yep. And as a result of that, we've been reminded how important that is, that both are needed, that one cannot replace the other. And so in terms of balance, you know, the sort of, yes, it's great to be able to meet on Zoom because look at all this time we save trying to travel to, you know, Timbuktu to meet in person. But at the same time, meeting in person is still important, and we have to make time for that too.
Just imagine the balance of, I mean, just imagine how efficient it was for us to meet as a group once a week at Sandy Springs Christian Church. From, you know, many of us were there from 9 a.m. for, you know, a few Sunday school lessons, which really, at least for modern disciples, a lot of times was just us chit-chatting, sitting around the table, catching up with what everybody was doing for a week. And then, you know, going to the service at 10:15, and then, you know, spending, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes after the service, just hanging out, chit-chatting, hugging people in the narthex, saying, how's it going? How's work? What's the family like going? But now we don't have any of that. Like, even when we do go to church, which we are going to physical church, but, you know, we have protocols in place for good reason that kind of says, you know, when you get to church, go to your pew, sit down, you know, wear your mask. Don't try to, you know, we try to interact some. I mean, let's face it. We're still going to interact some, but
it's not hug each other, perhaps, you know, at this point.
Yeah, let's do a fist bump and say, hey, how are you doing? But it's quite frankly not the same. So our church has had to adapt.
Yeah. No, it's definitely not the same. And it makes you appreciate even just the simple act of being in person for Sunday school and just talking in person. Mm-hmm. You know, that seemed to be something we took for granted. And again, it goes back to maybe in a pre-COVID era, there are some who might go, you know, I can do that anywhere, anytime. Maybe I'll skip Sunday school this morning and not go do that. And now, I don't know about you, but it's like, oh my gosh, can we please get back to that as soon as possible? Because all I want to do is like talk to people and sit around the table and have conversation in person.
Totally. You know? I mean, Brandy and I have talked about many times, one of the many reasons why we, you know, chose to start coming to Sandy Springs Christian Church on a regular basis was because one of the first weeks that we came, we had Jenna and Betsy come up to us, you know, out of the blue. We didn't know who these people were whatsoever. And they were like, hey, come to our modern, at the time it was called Modern Family. Now it's called Modern Disciples class. And we were like, none of the other churches that we had been visiting, you know, people would come up to us and talk to us, but nobody was like trying to get us to do more than just come back next week. They were trying to come, they were like, come back and hey, come early. And we're like, wow, they're really serious. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And we did.
Yeah.
And we're still here today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and no matter whether it's church, whether, you know, whatever it might be, we just have been reminded of it's inherent to the human condition that we are social creatures, mm-hmm. that we need each other and that we're reliant upon each other. And that is built into the very essence of God's creation. I mean, it just is. And so to have that removed when we're talking about balance, to be reminded of, you know, when all of that's removed and taken from you, you're reminded of how much you need that. And boy, we need both the time that we've been given, but we also need the in-person interaction mm-hmm. that, you know, and dedicate the time to that. And so finding balance in both those things is, I hope, a lesson that we take from this and build into our lives. So,
What do you think is one thing that you used to think was like sacrosanct that you used to do all the time before the 2020 pandemic? What do you think was one of those things that you will never do again, or at least do very, very much less of?
Oh, you know, I think that one of the gifts that this time has given for me personally, I know so many have been isolated and alone, may not have families, you know, or be older and live by themselves. And so it's different for me personally, as someone who has two young children in the house, a spouse, you know, the amount of time that I was gifted, or we were gifted, in not traveling from meeting to meeting and not spending all our time in the car going from church back home to church back home. My wife's a pastor too. For those of you who may not be aware, you know, two respective churches we're serving. Mm-hmm. The number of meetings you have is, as you know, many. Mm-hmm. For most of those, if not all of those, to be in person, to to have all of that time back and to be able to, you know, spend more time with your kids playing board games, or, you know, Harrison and I could go out in the afternoon, late afternoon, and play nine holes of golf, or, you know, there was time to go outside in the neighborhood and walk as a family. And, you know, I don't want to lose that. You know, we've got to dedicate time to in-person, you know, meetings and gatherings. I mean, that's so important, but not so much so that we lose sight of the balance of family life and giving time to those we love at home and otherwise. I mean, and so I hope I don't go back to what you described as the ongoing hustle and bustle every day, just trying to make it to the next meeting. I hope that that I get to a place where I can find some balance in both. So,
well, my thoughts on that are the exact same. The way that Brandy and I put it is we used to be two ships passing in night many times. You know, I would come back from my work trip and she would be headed out for hers, or, you know, and maybe we got to spend the weekend together, but, you know, no longer are we two ships passing in the night. We're two ships, you know, sailing, you know, side by side. And you're doing it with now your wife more so than ever, and your kids. So you have four ships, you know, so that it's so great. I mean, and to think, you know, you probably are more powerful as a couple than you've ever been because of it.
There's no question. Our relationship has deepened. You know, the commitment you have to your family deepens. I mean, strong before, but it only grows. And you come to, you just see things more clearly. You know, you just sort of get out of the fog of the busyness of life, and I've actually been able to watch my children literally grow in front of my eyes. You know, most parents, it was this way for me before. Like, I would sit there and I'd get home one day and I'd be like, man, when did you grow up? You know, and now I haven't asked that question because I've literally been watching it unfold behind before my eyes every single day, which is something that, you know, was not the case before. There's one other thing before we move on, because I know we probably need to, but there's one other thing that I thought of that may be a little bit different than a lot of what we said. I know a lot of people have thought and felt. There's one thing, though, that for me personally has been interesting. You know, and many of the listeners know that I lost my mom in the last year. And, you know, losing a loved one during this time has been, of course, hard for lots of different reasons, not the least of which is, you know, to your point about weddings, the same is true of funerals. You know, you couldn't gather with people in the same way. You know, they're just... What I was reminded of during that time and that experience was, I spent my doctoral project was on preaching the funeral, basically, like preaching the funeral homily.
Yep.
And I did a lot of work on the rituals of the funeral service. And I was reminded of just how important those rituals are for our lives. And pre-COVID world, all of those rituals were eroding. You know, you have weddings were becoming more secular, funerals were becoming more secular. The world itself was becoming more secular, but, you know, the kind of liturgies were becoming less higher, you know, they were becoming lower church, they're being flattened out. And again, not all that's bad. There's balance in all things, but it's amazing the way in which when someone dies, even the little things of being able to drop everything and get in your car and drive to wherever that person is and be with them in person, possibly either before or after they die, and then be with your family that same night to talk about that person, and then go to the funeral home physically to make those arrangements, and then go to the church and, you know, or wherever you're going to have the funeral and have someone officiate it and have those friends and family who are there, you know, to be of support. And all of those things are little rituals that were completely taken away from us in many respects in 2020. And for all of us to be able to move through life and make meaning of the things that happen in our lives, those rituals are really important. And it just reminds me of how important what the church does and the rituals we have are, but in many respects, I mean, look at the, I mean, on a completely different level, look at the inauguration.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of who's being inaugurated, mm-hmm. those rituals give stability mm-hmm. and bring a sense of comfort, and they make meaning for those people for whom that ritual is important.
Yeah.
And they're done the same way. And people complain about, oh, it becomes row. It's the same thing over and over and over again. But there's a reason, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's amazing how it structures our lives and gives us some semblance of stability and comfort to be able to live and to move on and all that stuff. So anyway,
that was one other thing. I'd love to add in there a little bit less of a less deep way of saying what you just said also, but I'm a big fan of sports. I love going to watch Braves games, Falcons games, UGA Bulldogs games, Atlanta United games, and all of those things are in-person events to me, especially now this year. Like, I maybe watched a little bit of the National League, you know, championship series with the Braves, and then a little bit of the World Series, but like, you know, maybe the Georgia Florida game, but none of it really felt as important, if you will, because it was just virtual. And even though, like, I watch a lot of sports on TV, I actually watched so much less this year because of just knowing that I couldn't even physically go if I wanted to for a lot of these things. And those rituals and those traditions, I would say more so when it comes to sports, those traditions of being in person and chanting a certain chant at a certain time, like that's part of like being like in the ball field with the players. And we lost that last year to a large degree. And maybe this statistic is not relevant anymore, but I got when the Bucks won the last weekend to go to the Super Bowl, some of my friends live in Tampa Bay, and just so happens the Super Bowl is going to be in Tampa Bay. The ticket sales for that, when I was told this past weekend, right after they got in, just to get in the door, $12,000. Like, jeez. Granted, that's because, you know, they have a very limited ticket supply. But that just goes, I mean, and normally Super Bowl tickets are super high, but normally, like, just to get in the door, maybe a couple thousand, two or three, you know, which is an insane amount of money if you think about it for 4 hours of football and maybe, you know, half an hour of a concert. But you know, people love that kind of stuff, and people want that. And you know, we'll get back there.
Absolutely.
Those are some of the things that I really want to come back. Just like, you know, you're expressing with, you know, funerals and weddings. I think people are recognizing that those rituals are keenly important to humanity.
Well, and they're done differently it makes such a big difference when they're not done in the spirit in which they're intended and with the people that, you know, you're sort of, in that spirit with. So for instance, one of the things I've laughed about has been, you know, when I was watching TCU football this year, and I didn't watch it as much. Of course, TCU is my undergrad alma mater. So, you know, I didn't watch it as much because I wasn't as connected to college football for all the reasons you just said. But there's this empty stadium, and there are these cheerleaders social distanced who are doing our chant, which is silly to begin with. It's literally riff, ram, bazoo, lickety, lickety, zuzu, hoo, wah, ha, hoo, give them hell, TCU. When that's done
bravo.
By six or seven people socially distanced in an empty stadium, it's really weird. Like, it's just not safe. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's something about being in person and having those things that bind us together. It doesn't quite work the same in the way we've had to live them in the last year. So anyway.
Well,
we can move on to whatever's next.
Let me jump into, because as I mentioned last week, last time we did this, you know, I am reading the Bible. I'm making my way through it. And this span has brought me into Exodus. I finished my first full book of the Bible by Genesis and into Exodus.
Good
and
for you. Congratulations. That's good.
Before I start off into the patience part of what I've learned from Exodus thus far, I want to I want to surprise you with something that I think might be worthy of a discussion down the road, and hopefully maybe even with someone else within our church or community. But one of the big stories of Exodus, or the big story of Exodus, is Moses and his life and his efforts to free the Israelites, the Hebrews, from the Pharaoh. And the thing that I think is interesting to start it all off with is that when Moses's first storyline is introduced, it's talking about a time when Pharaoh was very afraid of the Israelites, and so afraid that he was ordering all of the Israelites' males, I believe, to just be killed, like just kill them all and throw them into the Nile. There's too many of them. We need them to stop reproducing. And to me, that also sounds very similar to a New Testament story around the time of King Herod, who was mm-hmm. also afraid of this little baby we call Jesus. So it's interesting that the two kind of align there. But then I think that more interesting part of it that continues on is about how Moses, I think everybody knows that he was saved because he, instead of being tossed into the Nile, he was put into a little basket, a wicker basket, and floated down the Nile. And just so happens that he lands on the shores or in the reeds and found by some of Pharaoh's maidens. And that I think is a very very early allusion to Christ's birth, the maidens in this case being the proto Marys. The maidens found him, and the maidens brought him out of the reeds and kind of like took care of him, and eventually like told Pharaoh that they had this child. And Pharaoh was like, okay, if you guys like it, keep him around, even though there's no reason why Pharaoh should want Moses to live. I mean, Moses was a straight up Israelite. He was a Hebrew that Pharaoh himself wanted all of them dead. So I think that the power, and my point to all this is the power of women in the Old Testament is there. And I think that if you look for it, you can find it. You have to dig a little bit, because certainly there's some Old Testament readings that are very chauvinistic. Let's just call it for what it is. But there are very powerful women doing very powerful things, and they're just kind of a little bit in the background. And I bet you there's whole studies that have been done on this, and maybe something that I look into in the future. But I think that that's something that I thought when I first started reading Exodus, like, this is cool. So,
there are plenty of stories of the Old Testament and New Testament for that matter, mm-hmm. of women. You know, Deborah comes to mind. You know, there's a story about the problem is that we know, I mean, this is not anything new to anybody that's probably listening. I mean, Scripture is written by men, you know, history is mm-hmm. written by men. I mean, that's just sort of, and so it's all sort of kind of through that lens. And so over and over again in Scripture, you see women portrayed in ways that, you know, it's the woman's fault. It was her sensuality that caused the man to do this. You know, that was just kind of right. The narrative of, you know, that's sort of the narrative of kind of patriarchy, right? Yeah. But if you read the stories and see what women did in order to, in many cases, achieve, you know, what God, there's a story of a couple of midwives who I forget their names, but they end up intervening, you know, going against what they're told to do to kind of do God's will. There's a woman who ends up putting a stake through a king's head. It's a really violent story, but it goes to what women had to do in order to achieve it at times, God, you know, what God was calling them to do, by the only means they had, because they were without power, they were subjugated. And it's amazing how we interpret those stories in ways that say, oh, that evil, violent woman, or that woman used her sexuality to mm-hmm. get that man to do that. But if you read it through the lens that we're talking about, in terms of, you know, there are plenty of women who were who did what they had to do in order to, you know, sort of further God's work on earth. Mm-hmm. They did it because they, you know, that it was the only means they had. They didn't have the power men had to accomplish things in the way men could. And so plenty of examples in the Old Testament, plenty of examples in the New Testament. And I'll get you a book with a great title. I think it's okay. called Power, Sex, and Gender in the Old Testament. I've got a copy of it in my office, so you can borrow it. I think that's what it's okay. called. I'll have to go back and look at it, but I just think it's an intriguing title.
Yeah.
So yeah, if
not, yeah, no, it's good.
But
I like it.
But anyway, yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to explore that, especially as, you know, I continue to read through you know, some of these Old Testament passages, and I'm trying really hard to pick out those types of, like, instances, if you will, where, you know, had a woman not intervened, you know, and maybe she just gets a very slight passing mention, had a woman not intervened, Moses would have kept sailing down that and floating down that river, and the Israelites would have never been saved. Thank the maidens. Yep. But that Moses eventually grew up to be a man that was very favorably looked upon by Pharaoh for one reason or another. And eventually, you know, just kind of trying to highlight through some of the, how we got here with Moses, but eventually Moses recognizes that his calling is not to be a part of the Egyptian culture and not to be part of Pharaoh's, you know, luxurious lifestyle, even though he could have easily been. I mean, let's face it. I mean, he probably could have just lived out his days drinking wine, getting fanned by, you know, giant palm leaves, and had all the maidens he wanted. And, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, Moses recognized where he came from, which was from, you know, the Hebrews, and recognized that his people were being subjugated unfairly. And so therefore, Moses started talking to God, and his brother, which I might add, Aaron, also plays a very important role, which my brother and I, who are reading this together, love to kind of back and forth about a little bit, because, you know, brothers are a tight bond. And yeah, Moses, yeah, and Aaron recognize that they need to free their people and talk to God about it. And eventually God's like, okay, well, if you want to do this, here's what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of bad stuff that's going to happen. And Pharaoh's not going to let your people go. Like, he's just not. Like, he's making too much money off of these people. I mean, it started off, the Pharaoh before this Pharaoh, that the people, the Israelites, only had to pay him 1/5. And that by the time that this Pharaoh is in power, the Israelites are now paying him 4/5, if not everything, of what they made. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. true form of slavery, not just like a little bit of a taxation. Like, these people were Pharaoh's slaves, and, you know, Pharaoh needed them to continue on, and that's terrible. And Moses recognized it. And so anyways, God says, okay, if you're going to do this, I'll help you do it. And, what results is, you know, which I think most people who've, you know, read the Bible, or at least, you know this story, is the 10 plagues, which are just horrible. I mean, you read about these things and you're like, how did one of these things just happen and Pharaoh's not just like, let him go? But just to kind of,
with the exception of like the frogs and the blood in the river, I think it was pretty much 2020, right?
Pretty much was. Yes. Yeah. Let me read all of them real quick, and let's read through all of them. And it was 2020. So we had the first one, turning water into blood. The next one, frogs, which was basically like, frogs were everywhere. Like, that's just gross. I mean, they were coming out of people's ovens, lice and gnats. And everybody was covered with lice. I mean, that's gross. The next one was all the wild animals, were attacked by flies. And th- The next one was there was a pestilence of the livestock. And, you know, all of the horses and donkeys and camels all got sick. The next one was the actual Egyptians and the Israelites all got boils, like just disgusting. The next one was, okay, thunderstorm of hail and fire, like fire literally raining down from heaven. Nope, not good enough. Your people are not set free. Although at certain points, Pharaoh was like, oh, no, please stop this plague from happening. If you do, I'll let your people go. And then as soon as like the plague stopped, Pharaoh's like, nah, cutting you off. I lied. Yeah. The next one, locusts, you know, covered the land in locusts. Number nine was darkness for 3 whole days, like a darkness that you couldn't even see the person in front of you. Couldn't see your hand in front of you. Like, I can't even fathom what that kind of darkness would feel like. I mean, we were all very lonely last year. Imagine being lonely for 3 days in pure darkness. It's unfathomable. And then the last one that kind of, I guess you could say, stuck, which was, actually the death of the firstborn, which was also, is this the first kind of official holiday, if you will, in the scripture, with it being Passover?
Passover.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I don't know the Judaism calendar well enough to know first, but yes, I mean, this is certainly part of Passover, so for sure.
Well, apparently, you know, So I bring all this up because as I'm reading this, I'm like, first when I'm reading this, I'm like, man, I'm struggling with one of the things in my life right now that is unfortunately a bit like Pharaoh. That's, and Brandy can attest to this. I mean, I can be known to be a bit stubborn. You know, when I get my heart set on something, I kind of just, I'm a locomotive. I'm gonna go for it. And I'm stubborn. And I kind of got in my head that like, oh man, am I like Pharaoh? And it really got me down for a little bit. And I all I said in my comment to my brother was that, man, pray for me that I am not like Pharaoh, bro. And thankfully that same day, my brother said, I just said a prayer for you. And then by the next day, I started kind of really thinking about it more and kind of putting a different lens on it. And this is what I said. I said, you know, I thought a bit more about the story of Moses and the plagues, and the flip side to the negative stubbornness shown by Pharaoh is actually the positive patience shown by Moses, Aaron, and the Hebrews or Israelites, awaiting the release from slavery. I told my brother I definitely appreciated his prayer, and it helped me continue to think more deeply about the positive meaning behind these plagues. Positive meaning behind plagues. Wow, how was that possible? Well, can you imagine the patience that Moses, Aaron, and the Hebrews must have had to muster to continue standing up to Pharaoh after all of these horrible plagues they had to endure? Because they had to deal with it too. Like, it wasn't like they only happened to Pharaoh and the Egyptians. It happened to the Israelites who were already in slavery. And, you know, and also on top of the plagues, the continued broken promises. And but what I ultimately learned out of this is that patience beats stubbornness any day of the week. Mm. And the patience that Moses, Aaron, and the Hebrews had, it ultimately prevailed over the stubbornness of Pharaoh. And I want to be more like Moses, Aaron, and the Hebrews.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't we all? Maybe 2020 wasn't so bad.
Maybe not. I mean,
yeah, I think that, I think you make a good point, and really it's one that's made, throughout scripture. It makes me think of, the season of Advent that we, you know, practice in the church of, you know, we are so quick to rush to Christmas and to celebrate the birth that we can lose sight of the waiting that is so important to do in the midst of that. I mean, so to make an analogy, you know, you, you want your baby to be delivered as soon as possible because you can't wait to meet this life form. But you also want to make sure it, you know, doesn't come early as much as possible because you know how important that time for it to grow and develop and all those things is. There's a real importance to waiting, right? Mm-hmm. We can't appreciate the gift of God and Jesus to us if we don't know the darkness of the world that was there before him, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, it's that there's value. We don't like to wait. We don't like to wait in traffic. We don't like to wait at the grocery line at the store. You know, we don't like, I mean, think about all we've done to avoid having to wait. We've got mm-hmm. Amazon Prime now, you know, you just click on it. It'll be there in a day or two. You know, anything that you need or want, you could almost have instantly. We live in an instant gratification culture. And yet scripture over and over again, including the story you've just, you know, recaptured, teaches how important patience is. And it's out of patience that new life can come. And boy, there's no other word for it. I apologize for it, but it sucks to be in the mire of it. I
mean,
it's terrible to live in the darkness. It's awful to go through what we've had to go through in the last year. But the hope of our story, over and over again, the hope of our story is that light comes out of the darkness, that new life comes out of death, that, you know, that there's crying at night, but there's joy in the morning. You know, that is our story. And, you know, you hope that a time like we've just experienced helps us to come to appreciate what we do have, but even more helps us to create a better world, a new world that is more faithful and more life-giving mm-hmm. in so many different ways.
Yeah,
so, absolutely.
Well, and there's one more facet of patience that I've been thinking about in my life, especially is, you know, outside of church and work and whatnot, you know, one of the other things that I truly enjoy doing is, as I mentioned earlier, running and cycling and swimming. And actually I'm signed up myself to do an Ironman this year. And that's an important thing for me, but I also like one of the things, and I think I shared a podcast with you earlier this week of some guys that are in that triathlon community. And one of their mantras, and they've done 400 some odd episodes. And one of their mantras has always been the race that you are signed up for isn't the end, or it isn't really even the goal. The goal is the training, and the goal is to enjoy that process, because if all you care about is the end goal of going across the red carpet and, you know, being called an Ironman, you miss the whole point. The whole point is to enjoy the process and be patient and be and love going out on a run and cycling 70 miles up A1A, which I did earlier this week, which was amazing, even though I had only intentions to, you know, cycle for 20, 30 miles, but it was just so great. And I'm just like, this is awesome. Like, I'm so lucky to be able to do this. And I'm always going to remember that, you know, maybe even more so than the race itself. You know, the race is kind of like what drives you to want to train. But it's really the process, that is really the enjoyable part for me. And it's what gets me excited to do it all. So patience doesn't have to just be sitting around waiting for something to happen either.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that this may be a good place to kind of segue out on this one. I know we have some other topics we want to cover. We've been on a little bit, but
we have.
I think you're right. I think what we began this conversation with was, you know, the lessons learned, you know, from this time. And it's a reminder that, you know, even when the journey is hard, there are bright spots along the way. I mean, even when you are, you know, to the analogy of running, even when you're out in the middle of the country, you know, just, you know, peeled back, I mean, dying, not sure you're going to be able to make it the next mile. You know, there's this sort of beauty that's around you. And mm-hmm. if you'll take a moment to recognize it, it's always there. It just may not look like what you think it might look like, but you know, that's the story. That's our story, is that God is always present. It's just sometimes harder to see that. And I think some of these lessons we've learned throughout this year has been a reminder, as we reflect back, we can look back and go, oh, you know what? Boy, we weren't as alone as we thought we were.
No.
So, yeah.
Well, out of time, I think we'll skip one of the things that I had that maybe we would talk about, and maybe dig into that some other time. But I do want to ask you, and I think maybe by the time we end up publishing this, it won't be last week's message. But one of the things that you did recently, I'll just say, you preached on recently, was I would call a well-worn topic of, you know, good faith versus, or good faith, good works over or versus faith, based entryway into heaven. And you preached a very eloquent sermon on that. I don't want you to rehash it all, because you did an amazing job. And I would highly recommend anybody listening to this that doesn't know what I'm talking about, go back and listen to what was last Sunday, the
24th of January.
The 24th. Yeah. Listen to Nathan's sermon on the 24th and see what Nathan really said. But just take me through your mind and how you were able to see that I never would have seen on my own.
Well, whenever I go about crafting the sermon, it always begins with the text itself and kind of what I'm hearing it say to me, because at the end of the day, like, I come to think that any sermon that I need to hear, probably others need to hear. And this whole series that I'm doing right now called Promise is all about not the promises that we make to one another and to God, but rather the promises that God makes to us. And I think going back to what we talked about in the beginning of being so busy all the time, you know, I think that mentality, especially in our culture, it spills into our understanding of our faith. And we get so focused on what we have to do, what I have to do to earn my way into God's good grace. You know, if I just give more to charity, or if I just pray harder, if I do more quote unquote good in the world, then somehow I can earn my way into however you might want to define salvation. Right. But the truth is, in God's promise to us that, you know, God created us and loves us no matter what. We were created in God's image. I mean, that's the initial story and promise. And so to think about it and turn that on its head of Paul's phrase of, you know, we're saved by faith and not works alone. You know, what if it's not our faith, but rather God's faith that saves us, right? And I'm not even talking about, you know, when I think about salvation, I don't just think about, you know, heaven and hell. I'm not necessarily talking about that. We are being saved in this life. Every day we are being saved from ourselves in many respects. And, you know, whether it's, you know, however you want to define salvation, you know, God is constantly saving us from ourselves. And some of that is when we follow Jesus, but it's also things that we can't do, like when somebody forgives us and extends us unconditional grace and love. You know, it's things like that where we have to pause and go, there was nothing I could do to earn that. There was nothing I could do to make that happen. That is sheer grace. And that saved me in that moment. And that is all about God and has nothing to do with me. And so I felt like that was a message that, especially in this last year, especially when we couldn't, there was so much we could not do. Mm-hmm. A reminder that, you know, it's okay. You know, no matter how much we're doing or how little we're doing, God still loves us. And at the end of the day, we are saved ultimately by God's faith in us and by God's love for us. And so, I don't know, that was kind of the spirit behind the,
it sounds like you do know. That's impressive. I'm learning a lot from you. Thank you for this. And thank you again for doing this with me. I'm very excited about this episode. I think that people are going to get a lot from it. I think we'll end on you with what you just said there. Other than, I do think that one of the things that we want to do with 100% with this endeavor is we want to invite other Sandy Springs Christian Church congregation members, leadership to join in with us on this. And actually, we've already had a few people kind of raising their hand and saying maybe they want to do this. But I'm gonna go ahead and put it out on blast right now that Nathan and I want your feedback, and not just, you know, a pat on the back, although we'll take that. but we also want to know if you have something that you want to add to this conversation, and whether or not that's just one of you or two of you or a few of you. I don't know how many people we want to have. I think that it can get a little bit garbled, especially since we're trying to record this on Zoom right now. I don't want everybody talking over each other, but either way, please, if you have an idea that you want to incorporate into this podcast is for you guys. Please email me at Casey, Casey, Evans, Evans, SSCC at gmail.com or Nathan at sandysprings.cc.org. And I think in our newsletter, we've included all of those contact information. I think people know how to get a hold of us at this point, but we want you to be our first guest or guests on the upcoming episode 3 of Sandy Springs Christian Conversation. So, unless you have anything else you want to add, Nathan, I'll close this with a prayer this week.
Thank you, Casey, for this idea, for your vision for it, and for producing it. And I look forward to it each and every time we do it. So, thanks again.
Awesome. Well, then let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you for giving us hope, which can conquer any fear. Thank you for granting us the gift of patience to defeat all stubbornness. You are the ultimate bastion of patience, waiting for us. You created us to finally figure it all out. And all we need to do to figure it out is just stop, wait, and feel your presence with us. And I know that will give us and you the inner peace that we so desperately need right now. By your faith in us alone, we are saved. And thank you. Amen.
Amen.
All right.
See ya.